What is going on, sporting world? It is another beautiful episode of the Between the Tackles podcast. Another beautiful episode, a very special episode. Aditi Kinkabwala, how are you? NFL sideline reporter.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. This is such a, you know, it's funny because I am an NFL sideline reporter, but there was a time when Manish and I were covering a phenomenally interesting women's basketball team in the state of New Jersey together. That's where we go back to.
It's over 20 years ago. Aditi and I were on the Rutgers women's basketball beat, a Rutgers women's team, by the way, that made the Final Four one of those years that we were recovering.
And then Don Imus.
I mean, these guys might be a little bit too
other level.
They might be a little bit too young to even know who Don Imus is.
All right, Google Don Imus. But I will say this. Of all the coaches that I've ever dealt with, C. Vivian Stringer certainly ranks amongst the top. No matter the sport, no matter what. Her passion, her fervor, the way that she taught, all of that. So anyway, shout out to where we started, right?
Absolutely. For those who don't know Aditi's extensive background, she's a woman of diverse skill sets. As she said, you know, she covered newspapers, college sports, then went on to cover the NFL, the New York Giants, specifically for the Wall Street Journal for a couple of years, moved on to as a national correspondent for the NFL Network for about a decade, and then a few years ago moved to her current home at CBS Sports, where she's not only a sideline reporter, but does analysis, has a deep background in podcasting, in radio. I'm basically trying to tell you that she can jump tall buildings in a single bound, potentially, you know, even outrun the locomotive. She's a wife, a mother of two. She incredibly has time to do this podcast today, but we're really grateful to have you on, Aditi. And I know we want to get into a lot of football stuff. I initially just want to kind of get a behind the scenes look at the life of a NFL sideline reporter during the week. I mean, when do you get your assignment? How do you go about the production meetings and kind of how do you formulate your plan so you're ready to go on Sunday?
Well, this week, being that it's week 18, we didn't get our assignment until yesterday at about noon on Monday, which was a little bit crazy, and also found out noon on Monday that we're having two teams that we haven't had all year, the Vikings and the Packers. I haven't, in 4 years as a sideline reporter at CBS, I haven't had the Packers once, and we only had the Vikings once last year. So the preparation is maybe a little bit more amped up, a little bit more crazy because that window of warning is smaller and there's not the familiarity. You know, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I had the Dolphins and the Bengals. And I know the Bengals like the back of my hand. I've had the Dolphins a few times. That makes things a little bit easier. In general, we sort of know 10 days, 2 weeks out who we have. Sometimes we can guess who we think we're going to have. When CBS was almost exclusively AFC, it was a little bit easier too, because you sort of were generally in the AFC. And then as for preparation, you know, for everybody, it's so different. For me, as soon as I know my teams, I think about who I know that's connected to either of those teams, who's a member of the coaching staff, who's someone in the front office. And I look at who they've played recently. So who may be some coaches that have faced them recently. And I just try to pick the brains of people. I, of course, read local beat writers. Every day I'm reading clips. I'm doing research. CBS has wonderful research people. But for me, it's really about trying to talk to people directly myself, as opposed to, not to denigrate anybody that covers a team. I don't mean it that way, but I just try to do as much of my own work as I possibly can. And then during the week is the preparation. We have a crew call on Tuesdays where we're on a Zoom for about an hour where everybody on the crew from graphics to analyst to producer, director, we all sit, we kind of think about what's interesting us at the start of the week, what we should look towards that focuses us a little bit. Then I make sure to ask both teams to get at least two players on the phone during the week, in addition to who we'll meet with in the production meeting. I do those phone calls. I get additional information, storytelling, whatever it is that I can. We have our production meetings with each team. And then Saturday night, we have our crew production meeting where we kind of go over what are the things we feel most strongly about, what are graphics we have prepared, what are things that we're looking towards, what are big storylines, what are big picture things that, should the game allow, we'll hit. And then game day comes. And on Sunday mornings, I always wake up really early because it's game day. So I'm excited. And I do my best work in the morning. I did say this to Manish. Manish was like, should we move this podcast later? And I said, no, I'm not a good night person. At night is when I lay on my couch with a novel. I'm like, if you had said, can we do this at 5 a.m., you would have gotten a way more energetic, wide awake me. So Sunday mornings, I usually wake up around 5 and I'll do more note-taking, sort of go through my thoughts, things like that, get in a workout and head to the stadium.
That's pretty cool that you wake up every day, like excited to go to work. That's pretty unique.
It's not work, but that's the thing, that's Joe, true. Right? Like I really, really genuinely, it's funny because I've worked with a lot of people who find it unusual that someone who feels so strongly about mothering and parenting wants to have a job outside of the home. Because let me just say this first. I think the hardest job on the planet is being a stay-at-home parent. Whether you're mm-hmm. a mother or a father, Manish, like, I just think that being at home 24/7, which quite frankly I do basically 5 months of the year, is very, very, very hard. I think the fact that my kids see that mommy kicks ass and takes names is really valuable, that mommies are just as powerful and strong and independent and can have goals and ambitions just like daddies can is unbelievably important. I think that my children are more independent and resilient because they know they need to stand on their own two feet every weekend when during the football season when mom is gone is really important. And the pride that my kids, not my 6-year-old, because she's my daughter and she thinks football is boring, but my 10-year-old, my son, the pride that my son has in what mommy does is really, really so fueling. But again, I feel like I get to be so present and available with them when I am with them, because another piece of me is fueled and stimulated and challenged in an additional way. It's not the answer for everyone, right? Like not every mother feels that way, but that's how I feel. And what's funny about it is how many men, quite frankly, have questioned that. Like your job is to be home with the kids. And I'm sorry, I think I'm a better mom because I have something additional.
Yeah, and it's crazy how much I identified with what you just said. Like I have an unbelievable relationship with my mom. I moved from the Northeast down to the Southeast to be closer to her after her retirement. Like she was I don't want to call her like a single mom or anything like that, but she was a really do-it-yourself kind of mom. Like took a very active role in my upbringing and raising me. And she was also a woman in like a male dominated field. She was in law enforcement. She actually became the first female to be a certain position in United States history. She was the first management position in parole. And so she's like this extremely like kick-ass lady. And you're right, dude. You know how proud I am to go to her retirement ceremony? You know how proud I am to see the gold badge that she displays on her mantle? You know how proud I am that she was able to retire in her 50s and really like enjoy her retirement and get to move to like a great place? Like, so like, I guess I'll kind of try to bring it back in here. I don't want to gush too much about the great.
Well, no. I'm getting dusty in here. I hope my son says the exact same thing one day.
And it's funny because like when you have a badass mom coming up, growing up, dude, you're just like, my mom was a pain in the ass, dude. My mom was a tiger mom. She made sure I was very dedicated to what I did. I wasn't allowed to quit, give up on anything. And I couldn't be more grateful for what that made me today. I guess I kind of want to bring it back to what we're doing here. Podcast now seems like, I feel so great now like, talking about my mom. But and I wanted to ask you about being like finding your like kind of finding your role, finding your niche in a male dominated field, and kind of what you like things about you. Obviously have a very bubbly, a very like upfront personality. So I and my mom is the same way. So I feel like that might have been a leg up in the maybe in your field as well. But what are some of those things that you maybe navigated and things about yourself that kind of helped you through it?
I know, you know, it's so funny because I get asked this all the time.
Sure.
Because you're right, Manish aged me at the start of this whole thing, but it's been 20 years now.
Age myself as well.
Yes, but to be fair, yes, when I started and I was covering high school football in Texas, my very first job was at the San Antonio Express News in Texas. And I was absolutely in our entire sports department at the San Antonio Express News, there were only two women. And I was the only young woman, girl in press boxes. And when I was covering college football, I still remember a sports information director not being sure if he could allow me into the Rutgers locker room when all the men were going in. And I'll give a shout out to Greg Schiano. This was Greg Schiano's first tenure as a Rutgers head coach. And it was an away game. And the then PR director, media relations director, had never had a female beat reporter. And the men started going in and he blocked me. And I was like, whoa, you can't let them in and not me. And it was Greg Schiano who came by and said, no, you better let her in. And he said, if they plan to play on the NFL, they better get used to a woman in the locker room. And
that's a good point.
So to that piece, like, yes, I was often the only woman. And when I was very young, I looked young. My husband has aged me, not my children, by the way. But when I was young, when I was young, I looked extra young. So I was always so conscious of this stigma that women are only in this because it was always very, very important to me to maintain an extremely professional appearance, demeanor, all of that. But I can't say that it ever struck me, oh, I have to be smarter or work harder or be tougher or any of those things because I'm a girl. I think that I just was raised to be that by my dad from the very beginning. You know, I'm the daughter of immigrants. And so I was raised to be tougher and smarter and stronger and work harder. And that's just who I was. And I always felt, I'll say this, I'm rambling a little and I apologize, but I'll say this. I've always felt that athletes and coaches in the subjects that you deal with always respect intelligence and preparation. So if you bring it, you're never getting any of this, you're the girl, you're the woman, what are you doing here? You prove your mettle, you prove you belong by your preparation and by your brain. So it's almost, I tell, it's funny because I work with some college athletes and I always say, you never win in a fight against the fans. Like, don't talk about the fans. Don't talk about people booing you. It's never a win. So I'm not following my own advice in saying this, but I would only say the gender thing really only comes up with fans and not with actually the people that we deal with to do our jobs.
Makes sense.
And occasionally with some bosses who think it's a little bit unusual for a woman not to want to stay home with her children, but those are a few, not all. I mean, and I don't have any of those at CBS. Let me make that clear.
Good.
None at CBS.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the brain, the preparation. I think, you know, not many people, you know, people know Aditi now as, you know, a television personality. But when I watch you on television now, I can't help but think back to you as a writer. And, you know, I don't mean to, you know, embarrass you, but like Aditi is one of, she's a brilliant writer. Just an absolutely brilliant writer. And you can tell based on the pieces that you do for television. So I'm curious how, you know, your writing background has helped you kind of continue to be a storyteller for television pieces. And I'm saying this based off of just in this past year alone, I'm sure you have some favorite stories that you've produced for CBS, but I personally liked the Joe Flacco family piece when you played baseball with his kids. And, you know, he was adamant about how he believes he can be a starter now. And it's funny how his season has unfolded and the opportunities that he's got for two different teams and how he produced. But I want to ask how that writing background has kind of helped you become a storyteller on television. And do you actually miss the writing component of your professional life?
It's everything. I tell every young person that I talk to, it's funny because I meet so many young people who say, oh, I want to be an NFL sideline reporter. And I say, okay, go write first.
Right.
Because I truly, genuinely believe that what distinguishes or separates me or what my calling card is the reporting I learned to do as a newspaper writer. And it's, you have to ask smart questions. You have to ask different questions than the pack is writing. You have to ask smart follow-up questions. You have to listen well. You have to think about how to string together something that you learned 4 weeks ago that is now suddenly relevant, or something that you learned 6 years ago that is now relevant. And so every single piece of me as a sideline reporter, the questions that I ask, the players I choose to talk to, the things that I observe on the sideline, the stories that I pitch, all of it is steeped in who I was as a newspaper writer. And I know, you know, it's funny. I don't mean to cringe, Manish, but like when you say a TV personality, I'm a journalist. I'm still a reporter. I call myself a reporter. I'm not a personality. Like, we can be five-tool players. I can go play baseball with Joe Flacco's kids. I can tuck under Lamar Jackson's big heavy coat when it's minus 6 degrees. I can make Joe Burrow laugh. I can do more than one thing, but at my core, at my heart, I'm a journalist and I'm a reporter. And I take a lot of pride every single week in trying to uncover something new from the teams that we have and trying to give the fans something more than they've already gotten during the week. And that, I will say that, the sideline reporter gig, we are the beneficiaries of an access that is completely different than anything else. These teams are trusting us to tell their story, the story of who they are, in a completely fair way. And the best teams will tell us the truth. And there's a level of trust there. Sometimes the truth is not what they want out, but they want us to know it so that we're not ripping this guy or questioning that. Not that we're ripping, but I hope that makes sense in how I'm saying it.
Of course.
And standing on the sideline, I mean, come on, I see the actual conversation that the quarterback is having with his wide receiver or that the O-line coach is having with the O-line. It's not what you're guessing is happening. I'm hearing it. And sometimes I'm allowed to share it. Sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I see the way a quarterback responds when he's having a bad game and tries to walk off the field. And sometimes I might be able to share it and sometimes I might not. But there's a magic in having that access, but there's also a responsibility. And so, yeah, go ahead.
No, along those lines, I'm curious because I don't know this, but when you have information in real time outside of injury information, do you tell the producer that, hey, you know what, can you cut to me at the, you know, the next break? And how do you get the opportunities to share what you know in real time? Are they asking you for information? Are you being proactive?
Every reporter and every producer work differently. So it all depends. The current producer that I've worked with, who I've worked with for the 4 years that I've been at CBS, in fact, I've worked with other producers at CBS, but the last 2 years when I've been the full season, he's been my producer. He is amazing in every way. He uses me in a way that I think is greater and more varied than more producers. And a lot of it is me saying, you know, hey, the O-line coach is really trying to coach this guy up, or the quarterback is losing his mind at the wide receiver right now, or it's me giving a fresh observation, or it's in break, let's say they decide on this next drive, okay, do we want to talk about the quarterback on this drive? And then I'll say on talkback is the button I press to talk to the producer, I can add this, this, or this. Or I might hear my analyst say something and say, I can add. Or so sometimes it's information that I've gotten before we head into the game. Sometimes it's pitching something that I'm seeing. It's hard to come down. What my producer does, which is amazing, is sometimes he just opens my mic, and which is very, very rare. He just tells the play-by-play layout and he lets me go. And then the analyst talks. And that's different than, okay, let's go down to the field and Aditi Kinkabwala for a report. It's instead being a third voice. So I know how lucky I am with that. Now, sometimes I just need to yell at my producer. I remember a few years ago, I had a Browns-Colts game and Deshaun Watson was taken out in the first half. And they checked him for a concussion. He was cleared for a concussion, but he wasn't back in the game. I think this was the story. I think this is what it was, but he wasn't back in. So all we knew, I had given the update that he went into the tent, the red hat went in, they checked for a concussion. The team tells us he's been cleared, but he's still standing there on the sideline. And I, at some point, I kept saying to my producer, Jason, you need to come to me. Jason, you need to come to me. Jason. He's like, not now, not now. And at one point I said, Jason, you just need to come to me. And he said, Aditi, go. Gave a report on what was happening. Because any fan watching at home would say, why is our starting quarterback standing on the sideline? Right, like, right, what exactly is going on? And I finished. He was like, oh, okay, good job. But sometimes it's building that trust, right? Where, and I'm very lucky that he knows I'm not going to rise to that level unless it's that urgent.
It's funny, Aditi, because you have such a likable presence on TV. You're always smiling. I mean, you're in a torrential downpour and you've got this wide smile. But what people, you know, who've seen you enough know, and what people who've known you for a long time know, that yeah, you're very nice and you're very affable, but you're very tough and fair. And that leads me to this question, the halftime coach interview. When the coaches are losing, things aren't going well, they're curt with you, you know, sometimes they can get, you know, a little surly. Just how do you navigate that interview, knowing before you even asked him a question, he's probably not in the best mood because the team hasn't performed well in the first half?
Okay, well, let's be honest here, right? No one is at their best on camera. So the way that we used to do these is you just walk with a coach to their locker room or walk from their locker room back onto the field. And you had your notebook. It was just like being a newspaper writer. You had your notebook and you got to ask, quite frankly, four or five questions. And you didn't have to worry about how you phrased it. You didn't have to worry about how much time your phrasing took, because we're only allowed one question. That interview can't go over a snap after the half. And before the half, you have to cut to commercial break. So you're only allowed one question. Asking a double question is always a mistake. And I just did that a few weeks ago. I think I did it with Mike McDaniel. I had Quinn Ewers and I asked something about how he did and what did you tell him? And he didn't answer the second part because no one ever answers a two-part question. So like, right. Big mistake, Aditi. But anyway, you're only allowed one question. You have to be extremely conscious of how short, how tight that question is. Because remember, you have to get the question and the answer in before a snap. So like the total thing has to take like 25 seconds. So I need to think of a question that is somewhat forward-looking, that's also probably cutting out a few words in the interest of brevity. And it's real, like, it's just, it's not the optimum position to be in. And I could probably be easier on myself and just ask the same question every week. How do you assess how you just played? Yeah. What do you need in the second half? What adjustments have you made? What did you tell your team at the half? But I always try to at least cater or focus to what is happening. You know, if a team is getting the ball or any of those, it's not, I don't know. It's, you know, sometimes it's funny. Sometimes it's fun. That minus 6 degree game that I was talking about with the Ravens and the Bengals, John Harbaugh, we talked about, you know, they played really well in the first half. And so I asked something about that, but when he'd walked up to me, his fingers were like purple. Right, because he didn't have gloves on or anything, so he was like walking away, and I asked the first question, and I said, you know, like go, like watch out for your hands or warm up your hands, and he goes, I need your mittens, and it was like really cute, really funny. It was a nice little something. So I don't, you know, Aaron Glenn, we had a Jets game. When they talked about the miracle at the, Manish would know better than me. Was it the miracle at the Meadowlands? Is that what that was called?
That was the Eagles Giants game in the 70s.
No, not that one. There was some Jets game where there was some sort of massive
a lot of scoring. It was maybe Dolphins Giants or Jets.
Dolphins, something like that. And the Dolphins were up really big, but that same game, they'd talked about this, and Aaron Glenn at halftime, it was sort of, he was saying, you know, I've been here when we've done this, this, and this. And I said, are you going to tell your team about that at halftime? And he said, you bet I will. And so, you know, I don't know.
The Monday Night Miracle.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. He probably wasn't even alive for it. I don't know that I was alive.
We were alive. Before I watched my first NFL game, I'll tell you that.
They're not, but you know, it's tough because those are one of the, it's funny, like no one cares how the baby is, like no one cares about the labor, they just want to see the baby. So it's like, it's so easy to sit here and say, oh, these sideline reporters ask these dumb questions. Well, it's not that easy, right? Like, think about it, you have a grand total of 25 seconds and you get one question. And then sometimes you think, like, should it be really granular? Should it be about like one play that just happened? Sometimes it's about a guy who may or may not be injured. You're required to. I had a Jaguars Chargers game where Justin Herbert was hurt. He'd gotten to the tent just before halftime. I knew that Jim Harbaugh didn't have an update, but I was obligated to say, how's your quarterback? Right. I'd watched him. I was standing on the sideline. I saw that no trainer came up to him. No one told him anything. He literally did not yet know how his quarterback was. But I had to ask him, how's your quarterback?
Not like everybody at home knows that. You gotta weigh that against what you're seeing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I would just say from my seat, like obviously as a fan, like I'd have no idea like what goes on behind the scenes. You really must get your steps in on game day. Going from sideline to sideline. Like, do you get like tips from the producers that help you kind of like send you to a sideline if they see something happen, or is it really kind of all driven from you just kind of making your way around?
It's kind of, so, and I know that I've been told this because I've had quite a few security people tell me that they don't run like they run with me. I guess I have short legs, so I have to run. But anyway, it's on me to sort of sense who I want to pay attention to. So if I have a rookie quarterback, I want to make sure that I'm on the sideline before he starts a drive, when he comes off the field, who is he talking to? What is he doing? What is his demeanor? If there's a defense that's completely falling apart, then you certainly want to be on the sideline when they come off the field. Is this player going up and down the sideline? Is he encouraging guys? Are they hanging their heads? Now, sometimes I just get caught. You know, I had a game earlier this year. It was the Titans Cardinals game, and the Titans were down a lot, but I was sort of struck by the way that Cam Ward was talking to his team and the way Jeffrey Simmons was so engaged with the defense. And I remember saying to my producer, I don't know that these guys are dead. Like, don't give up on them just yet. And this is just the experience of, you know, you're kind of on the sideline, you get a feel, you get a sense of where a team is. And there was this unbelievable series of events. So I had sort of chosen to stay on the Titans sideline for a couple drives in a row. And there was this crazy series of events. And the Cardinals had a running back who ran the length of the field and then dropped the ball just before that the game. End zone.
Yeah.
Right. But I was on the Titans sideline. So a fan caught Jonathan Gannon and Amari DiMercato, like, kind of really getting into it after the drop. And I missed it because I was on the other sideline. Now, the Titans did end up winning the game. And they did, and it was crazy the way that they did. But my instincts, my gut, that like, hey, I think there's something happening here. And I remember giving a report about what was happening on the sideline and the demeanor of Cam Ward and all that. It was all right, but I still missed out on this major moment. Now, to be fair, if I had been further along the sideline on the Arizona side, I may have missed it anyway. I mean, I remember a play. I remember being on the side on a sideline when someone on Twitter said that a player had kicked a water cooler, and I was on that same sideline, but I was on the other end. Mm-hmm. I was on the side, like I was watching the line of scrimmage and the offense moving, and it was a defensive player all the way on the other end. So, I mean, it's just hard. You have two eyes, you know, there's only so much you can see. You do your best. You try to trust your instincts. You use your experience to kind of feel out what you think the next noticeable or notable thing will be, but there's no way to catch everything.
Well, it's impossible. Yeah, and those guys are giants. I mean, I'm not tall myself, but
yes, that is another problem for me. I am only 5'3", and so like when you and there's you can't like actually get in the sideline. You have to stand behind this yellow line. So there's a lot of like trying to peer over things, and some people's medical carts or whatever you call it, where they keep all their supplies, are extra high, which makes it really hard, frustrating. But anyway.
My mom's tiny too. You guys have so much. Maybe it's just like little like brown haired ladies that just take over the absolute world. I swear that's what it is. But it's crazy how much go into. It's funny. We had on Manish like 2 years ago, and we talked about like how like trades come together, and he talked about like this urinal story he had about like how a trade came together at like the urinal, and like it's so funny how like you're talking about like we see this buttoned up broadcast, two guys in the booth. Shirt and tie on, and you're in the producer's ear like, you better come to me effing now, I got something, get me on the line. And it's just so funny how much of that chaos goes on behind the scenes.
Oh my gosh, it's great having somebody on. Or you know, like the best is my producer will say to me, okay, I'm going to come to you on this. And then back in New York, we need an update. So, okay. Or I'm going to come to you on this and there's a pick. Or I'm going to come to you in this and there's a penalty. And so like, there's no, and I'm not a scripter. I know some people write out reports. I don't do that. I'm at my best when I'm talking naturally, when I'm talking conversationally, and I am always trying to take something live and fresh and then maybe supplement it with some of my reporting or some of my knowledge or something like that. So how can you script something if you're saying, oh, we just saw Trevor Lawrence come off the field and talk to Liam Cohen, or Trevor Lawrence came off the field and the first thing Liam Cohen did was my bad. And you know what? The way that Liam Cohen has taken accountability for his play calls this year has meant this much to his team for this reason. You know, so like you can't script that. Those are things that you sort of have to just speak from what's in your head.
Yeah, I feel like that goes
I did my
with
best to kind of just talk vaguely, but now I'm sitting here and I have to use actual examples. I'm sorry.
Of course. Well, I feel like it goes along with your nature. Like you have such a short time to do it. And it's like if you script something and you stumble and then you're thinking about it, you just got to roll with it off the top of your head. But I
Which show is so funny that you say that, because when I first went from newspapers to television, the first person that I ever worked with told me to script. And so when you write as a newspaper writer, you know, I was writing 1500 words a day. You get a ton of space to tell your story with every single detail you want to give. You're on television, you have 30 seconds. And when people are listening to you, they're not listening to more than 3 points, and they're definitely not listening to numbers. You know, like, you can use numbers to buttress your argument in a written piece, but when you're talking, I mean, the first thing I tune out is when someone gives me 6 stats. I can't pay attention to 6 stats, and I don't even want the stat. Like, tell me relative, like, don't tell me this guy is rushing for 123.3 yards per game. That means nothing to me. This guy is rushing for more yards per game than anybody else. Okay, that means something to me, you know? So anyway, you need to learn how to pick out what are your 3 facts. You need to learn how to talk in a way that people can process when they're hearing, which is different than reading. And I was told, script out your hits. And so then I'd script and memorize. And if I lost my place, I was like, oh, I lost my place. Now what?
Yeah, that's what would happen to me. Exactly.
I mean,
what
it was
happened to me.
Awful. It was awful. And it wasn't.
God forbid something happens
after you
write that. I had
this great field producers, my friend to this day. I was probably, I don't know, like 8 months into the job at the NFL Network. And I'll never forget, we were sitting in a closet at the Ravens facility where we had what the NFL Network called a team cam, which is the camera we would go back to the studios with. And I'm sitting in this closet and I had a radio hit. And I was on the radio with somebody, I have no idea where, for maybe 10 minutes, 12 minutes on the phone. And I hang up the phone and my producer says to me, "Why do you not do that on TV?" And I was like, "Well, you know, on TV, you need to perform. You need to like have flair. You need to whatever." And he said, "Why? Why do you need to do that? Like, when you're on radio, you sound so like you absolutely own what you're talking about. Just talk that exact same way on TV." And for me, that was the light bulb. It was, you know, there are some people that, as Manish said, are TV personalities. There are some people that have these unbelievable cadences and voices. We all have to be ourselves. It's funny, I have a sign for my daughter and I say this: be yourself, everyone else is taken. And so for me, the thing that works is to just talk like I'm talking to you guys.
Yeah, well, being yourself has made this an unbelievable listen, I hope, for everybody out there. I've had a great time. Aditi, I can't believe you took the time for us, and we can't thank you.
We didn't get into any football. We didn't talk about Matt Stafford versus Drake May. We'll have to do another time.
We'll do that another time. I do want to ask Aditi. I mean, I know you're enjoying this, but you know, as I said from the jump, you have such a diverse skill set. Is this something that you want to do long term? I mean, have you ever thought of maybe having your own show? I know that's easier said than done, or even doing, you know, more studio work. Is there something, you know, on the horizon that could challenge you, you think, in a way that would be gratifying moving forward?
So one of my most important credos in life, especially since I left the NFL Network and in general, as we are on the cusp of a new year, is be where your feet are. And so I am very, very, very much enjoying where I am. I feel very blessed to be where I am. My children are 10 and 6. And right now, this really, really works for how much I want to be able to give my family and also be professionally challenged. There's definitely something I have my eye on that I'm not ready to share just yet. It's not necessarily in the media field, but all of this is an education that I hope is making me smarter. But right now, I really, really, really love what I'm doing. And I'll always be fueled to keep rising. So I can't, I'm not done yet. Let's just say that. I'm not done doing this. Even though it looks like Manish is trying to drive me out.
No, I just, like I said, I mean, you're brilliant. And, you know, I've thought that for a very long time. And again, I think, and call me biased, call me whatever you want to call me, but I think you're one of the best sideline reporters in the NFL for all the reasons that we discussed, the points that you brought up, points that Joe and Burge did as well. Your intellect, your background is really a lot different from other people on your field. And there are a lot of people who are good in your field. But for me, I can kind of tell when someone's really smart. And again, no disrespect to anybody else, but I can spot a smart, intelligent person a mile away. And just the way you present the information before, after, during games is, to me, unique and a reason why you're so enjoyable to watch, listen. You don't want to call yourself a TV personality. I say that in the most respectful manner because I know that you have so much talent, and the fact that you're doing great now is wonderful for people who have known you for a long time to see. But I can promise you, without knowing what your future, you know, long-term goals are, that you are destined for even greater and bigger things.
Now I'm gonna cry again. Is this like the Barbara Walters podcast? Does he say this to everyone?
No, he's usually very sarcastic and mean to everybody else. So.
Yes, very much so.
Manish, I really, really, truly appreciate that. And, you know, we do the work for the work itself. And it's, you hope that working the hardest that you can is enough to break through. But I am very, very happy, grateful, fortunate to also be where I am, to get to do what I do, to keep striving to be better every single day. So I don't, but thank you. Thanks for believing in me. Thank you. I hope that maybe we can talk offline and I can send you some phone numbers of people to call.
Okay. Well, it was a pleasure having you on, Aditi. You can catch Aditi this weekend, Packers, Vikings, with her CBS team, Spiro Dedis and Adam Archuleta. And we'll see what the postseason brings. But Aditi, thanks again. Really insightful, entertaining, and always a pleasure to catch up with you.
Thanks for having me, guys. So much fun. Hopefully we'll do it soon.
Thank you again for coming.